TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Welcome into Raised by Wolves. Danny Cunningham and Dane Moore coming at you on this Thursday, June 6th. And there's more Timberwolves news because what else would there be? The NBA Finals also going on. But the Wolves have hired an assistant coach. And Ryan Saunders' staff is starting to fill out at least a little bit. David Vanderpool, formerly of the Portland Trail Blazers, now will become the lead assistant and the guy in charge of the defense in Minnesota with the Wolves. So a big hire for them to get this thing moving and start to fill out a staff. Dane, what's your initial reaction or initial takeaway to this hire?
Well, Woj was quick to point out that he was going to be the defensive guy. I mean, that doesn't always happen where you just, sure, he just got hired. So, yeah, I think we know that Vanderpool is going to be the defensive coordinator for the Timberwolves, and Rosas and Saunders have talked about that's how this new coaching staff is going to be put together, which I think obviously is a good thing. I guess what I'm curious about is what defense are they going to run?
Yeah.
How are they going to do that? It's pretty easy to point fingers at the scheme and the way that Tibbs, you know, functioned the defense, that they weren't necessarily just bad. I think particularly certain seasons or certain extended periods of time, they were running a defensive scheme that did not fit the roster. It was just what Tibbs had been doing for kind of the entirety of his career.
It was Tibbs's identity. He tried to force his identity onto the roster that the Wolves had.
And now the question is, okay, is David Vanderpool's identity what the Portland Trailblazers ran last year, or is it to be determined dependent on what the Timberwolves group of players are? Because in Portland, schematically, if we look at the big as the main thing, which is obviously the main thing in Minnesota, they ran a drop scheme defense. They were not particularly switchy, as people like to say. And I don't know if you're somebody who is really concerned about how Tibbs functioned the defense, then you can be like, well, is Vanderpool going to do the same thing? Is he just going to do it, have them execute it better? I don't know. Maybe Vanderpool will do what, I mean, Ryan talked about at his press conference. You were there, how they want to have a whole bunch of different types of switching and this and that. It's hard because it's not like football where a coach is like, yeah, we run a 3-4 scheme. Yeah, we run a 4-3 scheme. Like, you kind of figure out what the scheme is by watching the game.
Yeah.
Because they could be like, well, we switch. Like, look, we switched here.
Yeah.
How can you say we don't switch?
Yeah, and I think Tibbs wanted to fall back on that a little bit. Well, we've got so many switching partners. And
that was his line.
That was his thing that he, and I picked up on that in the very brief time I spent around Tibbs. It was, well, we've got so many switching partners, and that's one of the things that they really leaned upon to be like, yeah, we do switch. It's just the circumstances are always different.
Right. And, like, the good way to think about it is, you know, are you switching five?
Yeah.
Are you switching five guys? Are you switching four? Or are you switching three? That's like real basic basketball terminology in that sense. And what Tibbs was talking about when they had switch partners was, all right, we're going to switch four a lot of the time, or up to four, and then Cat is not going to be in that situation. He's going to drop back and wait for the big man to come back to him.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Does Vanderpool do that again? I think Rosas is going to put together a roster that can switch four. That's why they stunk in 2017-18 is the Butler year, was because they didn't have those switch partners.
Yeah.
They were like trying to run switching four guys, and they're trying to drop Cap, but like Jamal Crawford couldn't switch with Bielitsa, couldn't switch with Jimmy. You know,
it was really wonky, I think is probably the best way to put it.
Yeah, and so it's not just about the coach. It's about the pieces that he puts there. And Rosa says, we need better defenders, quote. And those, what a better defender is, or what a good defender is going to be dependent on what David Vanderpool and Ryan Saunders decide is going to be their defensive identity. And I'm really curious to see what that is.
Yeah, I'm really curious. And I'm hopeful that he's going to be a guy that his identity is not what Portland is, but he's someone that can implement a smart system based on the people already in place, or that will be in place, because I do think that we're going to see a good portion of roster turnover between now on June 6th and October 18th, or whenever opening night will be for the Wolves.
Well, it's like, so I was thinking about it through the lens of the finals. You know, been watching the Raptors try and defend Golden State, and they were a team who throughout a lot of the regular season dropped Marc Gasol back in pick and roll, but they recognized against Golden State, you know, we need to play this at an even level. We can't just drop back and let Steph pull up. Like, Gasol's got to be able to come up or he can't play.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I've loved out of Nick Nurse is finding that balance of, you know, of being like, yeah, we were a drop team, but we don't have to just be a drop team.
Yeah.
And I think that's the ideal identity of a head coach who can, dependent on who you're playing, have a group that can do all sorts of different things.
Yeah, yeah. And I think not to dive into the finals too quickly here, because we'll get to that for plenty of this podcast, I'm sure, but I would have liked to see Toronto blitz more, especially last night when it is Steph and, yes, Draymond's an all-star in his career, and Boogie's the same thing, but Draymond can't really shoot. Boogie's not himself right now. It is Steph and a bunch of other guys out there. I think that you should be blitzing Steph way more than Toronto.
But that's
has
where
been.
That defensive coach comes in,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like, all right. So yeah, that makes sense. But they're setting screens up at 34 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So you're gonna blitz Serge Ibaka out onto Steph Curry? Like, yeah, I get that. But Steph's just gonna cook Ibaka from 34 feet.
He's
just so that's what a defensive coordinator, particularly when we think about this in the pick and roll sense, is what level do you want to play your big at?
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on where they set the screen, and it depends on who your big is. And I think it's like literally the most important element of figure out in your defense these days. And
especially in today's NBA, the way things are running, not every offense is like the Golden State Warriors, obviously, and there's not another shooter like Steph Curry that can do what he does as well as he does it, but it's trending that way.
Yeah, well, it's even like, I think you and I have talked about this before, like, I love the one game where they played against Kemba and both Covington and Cat played.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I mean, Kemba is an approximation of Steph in that they use him in
it's like Steph Light.
Yeah, yeah. They love running pick and rolls for him and having him pull up like off the dribble for three.
Sure.
On a really simple sense. And I just love the way the Wolves defended him when they had Covington, and they brought Cat up all the way and they used him with Covington. It was like, it was dynamic. It really stunted what the New Orleans, or not New Orleans, Charlotte.
Hornets, same thing.
Whatever.
It's the same franchise,
it's
really
all a blur. It really stunted what they wanted to do. And so I guess what I'm trying to ask myself is like, all right, Dana, are you just like making this opinion that that's the way they have to play because you really liked that one game and you liked those 11 games with Covington? It looked nice there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think what it probably is and probably will end up being is a diversity of coverages. That's probably the best thing. You don't want to just define yourself.
That's what it should be. You have to be able to throw multiple looks at every team that you face. And again, to get back to last night, I think that the Raptors should have blitzed Steph Curry more, but I'm not saying blitz him every time. But when you play,
show him different things.
Yes, you have to show him different things because if you're not, he ends up with 47. Now, granted, you still won the game and you did a good enough job, but you didn't show too many different things, and Steph Curry scored 47 points in part because of that.
It's funny because like, people watch that game and I'm like, feel like they're doing a pretty good job on Steph, or like Van Vliet, like he is sticking to him, and then you're like, wow, 47.
Van Vliet is 2015 Matthew Dellavedova with a kid.
Okay.
That's what Fred Van Vliet
and
is
a
right
jump
now.
Shot.
Delly was really good. Delly shot the ball really well in that playoff series.
Yeah, I guess
Well, that whole run for the Cavs. Like, he had, I want to say he had 19 or 22 points in one of the finals wins the Cavs had against the Warriors in 2015.
Jeez.
When they went up 2-1, and then he had to go to the hospital after the game because
$40 million contract.
He drank too much coffee prior to the game and at halftime, so he had to go to the hospital for dehydration. It was not the same after that.
Delly. I'm interested here for you because I know that this is what the conversation is going to end up being around this hire is, okay, you interviewed Vanterpool for
the head coaching
job.
Opening.
And I heard that he was very, very impressive in that interview. So in a vacuum, you're there, you're like, all right, we decided we want to go with Ryan, but this guy really impressed us. Let's try and convince him to take the associate head coach job.
Sure.
But
which is something that's been done before.
Yeah.
This would not be the first time that this has happened in the NBA. This is,
yes.
I don't want to say a common thing, but it has happened plenty of times before.
But the other little nugget that's come out too is that Juwan Howard was also offered this position before Vanterpool. So it's just like, I don't know. I hope we could just kind of move on to be like, this is just what the staff is. But I think that whole hiring process is going to be something that's that people go back to kind of vet and be like, what actually was going on?
Well, let me ask you this. Does the fact that Vanderpool had his name connected, I think, three or four other places and interviewed for at least two other head coaching openings this offseason, does that weigh in that thinking about the Wolves process? Because he did interview with the Cavs before.
And so did Juwan.
John Bielan. Yeah, Juwan Howard did too. He interviewed with the Suns before they picked Monty Williams. He's been connected in Memphis. I don't know if he actually interviewed, and they still don't have a coach for some reason, and it's June 6th without a coach. But so it's not as if, oh, the Wolves just found this guy, interviewed him, he was good, just be the associate head coach. Like, he had been talked to by a bunch of other teams, and none of those teams picked him either.
It just seems like one of those things, if you really want to be, if you're really frustrated with the entire narrative of the country club sort of deal, that, you know, you're just going to point to that. I think the more fun and enjoyable and positive sort of thing to do is, like, I think they got a pretty good associate head coach.
Yeah.
And, you know, that in and of itself, one that skews defensively, which we know this team probably needs to focus on more.
A little bit.
I think that is, I don't know, that's just enticing, but it's going to, I do think it's going to go through the washer of, like, was he actually interviewed for the head coach or the other thing, but.
And it's an easy talking point too.
Sure.
Like let's call it what it is. It's an easy conversation for a team that it's the middle of June and they're not playing basketball. If you're going to talk about them, this is an easy way to do
it.
Let's be honest. Yeah, exactly. But let's call it what it is.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you have to remember that a little bit.
No, it speaks to, for so long, I mean, obviously well before your time here, Danny, like, to be able to talk about the Timberwolves is to find the thing to rip on, because to accentuate the positives, there's just not as much there and it's not as interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess this is going, like, way zooming out, bigger picture. It's like, this team is good enough now to acknowledge the things that you're like, question mark, you know, but to be like, well, let's actually talk about how Vanderpool's going to use Cat, or how is it going to be positive? I don't want to just be like the, you know, polishing everything and it's all wonderful.
Yeah.
But as someone who's focused on negative things a lot before in the, you know, in the past, it's like, well, there's definitely room for things to get excited about going forward while acknowledging the question marks.
Yeah. And I'm not saying one way or another what I think that coaching search was, but I absolutely acknowledge that it could have been a charade. Like, it absolutely could have been. It could not have been. It could have been the most legitimate head coach. I sat in zero of the interviews, and unfortunately,
one of the only people in Minnesota who was not in the interview.
Yeah,
apparently,
I don't know.
It was a large group.
I think Gerson lost my cell number. Like, he didn't call me to have me come in and interview. I was ready to take the job. I was just gonna
the
coaching job. I was gonna implement the strategy: score every time and stop them every time. Win a title, baby.
Box and one.
How about that? In game two, the box and one that the Toronto Raptors broke out.
Yeah, that was. Nurse, man, he's doing a heck of a job
in that
series. And I mean, Kawhi is not 100%.
Oh, no. Kawhi is far from 100%. If Kawhi is 100%, I think they're up 3-0. In part because the way he played defense down the stretch of game two, if Kawhi is 100%, he gets a steal on that last possession that Andre Iguodala ended up hitting a three. Kawhi comes up with that ball near midcourt. There's no question in my mind if Kawhi Leonard is healthy. And maybe
he's tired.
Yeah. Well, I think it's more health than exhaustion at that point for him. Like, I think you find a way if you're healthy, but he just didn't, like, was physically limited. And then maybe he just ties it, but he probably has a layup at the very least. And then you never know what happens, but they're not losing right there. So I think you can make the case that if Kawhi is healthy, they're up 3-0. But obviously, you can point to all the injuries on the other side, too.
That's what I was going to say, is if Toronto somehow wins this, people can be like, oh, no KD, no Klay. Fair.
Sure.
But also,
but no one's going to be crying for the Warriors, I promise you.
No. It's just like, in Kawhi wasn't 100% either. But anyways.
Kyle Lowry can't feel his thumb when he's playing.
Well, and isn't Van Vliet something going on, too?
He had a kid.
I don't know if he's physically ailed from that.
No,
well, maybe sleep.
Yeah, exactly. He might. Yeah. There's a good chance he hasn't slept since before game three of the Bucks series.
Shout out to Ryan, too. Had a kid.
Yeah, Ryan had a son earlier
this
morning.
Things are going to happen.
Yeah.
Going forward.
Yeah, I wonder if now Ryan's just going to never miss from behind the three-point line. Because that's what it's turned into for Fred VanVleet. But bringing up the injuries, like, like Kyle Lowry's having surgery on his thumb when the season's over. He said his thumb, they numb his thumb up, like his left hand. I don't know whether they inject him or what they do, but it is numbed for games. He can't feel it when he's playing. It's that bad.
So unfun to play basketball when one of your fingers are messed up.
Yeah.
Like
it's totally really not fun to play basketball when you're hurt at all.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can't imagine whatever Kawhi is dealing with. And that's interesting because it's really just shrouded in mystery. Like, we don't know if it's a calf, if it's a knee, if it's a quad. We know it's like his left leg, but that's all the information that we have.
Classic board, man.
Yeah. How great was that article? So I found myself, I watched the first half of the game last night with a couple of friends, and then I watched the second half of the game at home in my apartment. And every time Kawhi would come down with a rebound or score, I would, under my breath, I go, Boardman gets paid.
If you don't know what we're talking about right now, it might be worth the subscription to The Athletic.
And find a code. They have codes all the time. You can get it for 40% off, I promise.
Yeah, it's Kawhi telling a story about, or no, Kawhi's teammates.
Yeah, Kawhi
and coaches.
Didn't talk.
No, never talks.
Duh.
Just talking about Kawhi was just a goofy dude when he was talking to himself about.
No.
Boardman gets paid.
Boardman gets paid.
You probably talked about this yesterday, but what do you make out of the D'Angelo stuff?
I have a couple of takes.
Okay, yes,
it probably is not going to happen. I think it's a good thing that they're involved because, one, your most important player is entering the first year of a five-year deal, and he's very, very close with D'Angelo Russell. And this is something that just seeing the team's name in for D'Angelo Russell will keep him happy to an extent.
Yeah.
That is, I don't think that that's a question. Like, that will, having the Wolves connected to D'Angelo Russell, who Carl has not made it a secret that he is friends with, will make Carl happy. It probably won't happen, but I think that it's a good thing that they're involved. There are avenues to make it happen. It's just really difficult for that to be the case. And that's brought up. But, I'm curious if a sign and trade is, how do they handle being subject to the hard cap?
That's over the luxury tax, though.
Is it?
Yeah, so it's like,
but also,
it's
what
are, 6 mil over the luxury tax.
You're going to be that because what's D'Angelo Russell's contract going to be? You're probably not going to be trading Wiggins for him. My guess is it's a package. It's going to probably be Teague, maybe Covington. Like, you're going to also have to give up assets to get him, too.
Maybe. Like, I mean, yes, you're going to have to give up some assets, but let's talk about D'Angelo Russell's free agency right now. Mm-hmm. Like, take the Wolves out of it. He's going to be a restricted free agent, which, what does that mean, Danny?
It means Brooklyn can match any offer sheet that he signs. And also, this happening for the Wolves, it's really contingent on Kyrie Irving becoming a Net.
Yeah.
More than anything. That is, if this is going to happen, and there are avenues for it to happen, they're just kind of difficult to navigate. The first shoe that has to drop is Kyrie Irving commits to the Nets and probably early in free agency.
Yes. But it could be two other free agents. Maybe it's not Kyrie, maybe it's KD and Kemba, whatever. There's a different ways where D'Angelo Russell becomes less attractive to Brooklyn.
They have to land a big fish, I think, for him to be less attractive.
Certainly.
We won't call it Kyrie, we'll call it big fish one.
But this is my point where people are like, oh my God, you're going to have to like pay out the nose to get D'Angelo Russell on the sign and trade. That's not what a sign and trade is set up to be. In theory, when I said D'Angelo Russell goes out onto the market as a restricted free agent to be paid at his fair market value,
mm-hmm.
right? That's in theory what restricted free agency is supposed to be, making him neither a positive asset nor a negative asset.
Mm-hmm.
He's a neutral asset.
Yeah.
So it's why, like, when Danilo Gallinari was acquired in a sign and trade by the Clippers a couple years back, that wasn't an asset the Clippers necessarily had to pay for because he was being paid at his market value.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you threw Covington in there. I don't think you're going to need to be paying. You're going to need to find a way to send some money back.
Yeah.
That's the bigger issue for me than attaching assets, because if the Wolves just had a $20 million neutral asset to send back, then it's not even really a thing.
Yeah.
You probably don't even need to attach a Kogi. Like, it's just something to get Brooklyn to choose you. What I'm concerned about, and I think if you're looking at this excited about D'Angelo Russell, as a Timberwolves fan, you go, what heap of money can the Wolves give to Brooklyn
mm-hmm.
that isn't a largely negative asset?
Yeah.
And the answer, the least negative, probably, is Jeff Teague.
Yeah.
That you could work on them. Maybe you got to attach Okogie to that to make it offset or something like that. But it's not inconceivable, and that's not that much.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that much to have to give up. So, but then the wrinkle in it there is, as you brought up, Kyrie is probably the queen in all of this that makes it work. Like, if you got Kyrie Irving, you don't want Jeff Teague.
Yeah. Well, because you don't want to pay your backup point guard $19 million.
Exactly. But then it's, now you can talk about three-way trade, or not three-way. Then you can talk about them rerouting Jeff Teague.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not impossible. What I'm enticed by is there is a situation that could come together where it's not that bad of a deal for the Wolves to acquire D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah.
And that's what a diligent front office does, is put themselves in place to be like, hey, we're ready if things break the right way to just have our hands open to say, come here.
Oh yeah.
We'll give it to you. And is that likely? No, but it's possible, and they're setting the groundwork for it. Tibbs, who called Jeff Teague one of the best point guards in the NBA incessantly, probably would not have his hands open being like, hey, let's keep our eyes open for D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah. And I do think that the Wolves have the right people in place in the front office to make it happen if it is something that can happen. They have built this front office so far with a lot of really creative people, and I think that that's a
Pascucci worked in Brooklyn last year with Russell.
Exactly, yeah. And now I want to talk about him as a player. It felt like last year, I don't know how much he's worth money-wise. I think he'll get close to the max, if not the max. I don't know if I would be comfortable giving him that.
Yeah.
But I think that someone will, because he was an all-star. He had a really good year. He's young. It's conceivable he gets better. But I think it's also conceivable that he gets worse, because I think that his shot selection didn't exactly change. He just made a lot of floaters, it felt like, this year. And mm-hmm. I don't have all of the data to back this up. I know that he shot right around 36 or 37% from three, which is good. It was a career high for him. Maybe that sticks.
There's reason to be skeptical about his production.
Yeah, after really three underwhelming seasons in the NBA, and then he kind of took
off. He's definitely good.
Yeah, there's no doubt he's good, and he would come in, he'd be the best backcourt player for the Wolves.
Yeah.
But I also don't know how much he's actually worth and if this is a move worth making.
Yeah, well, you said max and close to a max, and like, as you know, max means a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
With Brooklyn, he can get the cap max, which is $5,158.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's out on the market with another team, you know, it's $4,122.
Yeah.
So it's like those mean different things. Like, as in the same way that KD's max is way bigger than both the or at Kemba, like what Kemba can get, like $220 for.
I think it's $221 over five. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like there's an $80 million difference in what the Hornets can offer him versus what Utah can offer him.
And Russell can get 25% of the max, if you want to talk about it that way. That's the $4,122 if he were to come to the Wolves. Yeah, 25% of the cap, sorry. Maybe he gets, we can't know the market. I don't think it'll be that high, and you know, I think the front office isn't going to jump on it if that's what it is.
Yeah,
I think they're setting up themselves in a place to be like, we're interested in Russell if we can not give you many assets.
Mm-hmm.
You're willing to take Teague, whatever. And it's for a price tag we feel comfortable with. Because it's essentially a sign. It's a sign and trade.
Yeah.
Like, you're not, you need to find that deal to be attractive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, you know, a lot of people are like, oh man, get this done. And it's like, well, yes, Russell and Kat would certainly be interesting. But there's a whole bunch of other factors. It's not just like a certainty that it would be an awesome deal, because as maybe you suggested earlier, if you got to give up Covington and Okogie in that deal,
yeah,
it's, like,
it
and
might
you
got to
give
worth
Russell
it.
The max, no mm-hmm. way,
yeah, exactly.
Don't do that.
That's, I'm not saying that the Wolves would do that or could do that, but that's an avenue to get it done.
Yeah, I think probably the more likely avenue to get it done. But I think, and what the story I wrote about it was like, I think it's like, I'm not comparing James Harden to D'Angelo Russell.
Sure.
But I think it's the same thing is that where Houston was waiting. They were like, hey, you know, if the Thunder end up trying to really, they decide they don't want to go on the tax, they don't want to bring all three of them back, we're here. We're ready with mm-hmm. our hands open. And, you know, the history of that went out.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They didn't have to pay a whole lot to get him.
Yeah.
And they got James Harden, and it very much changed the trajectory of their franchise. But you said, talk about him as the player. I don't think he's anywhere near that level where he could be a number one on a really good team.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. I think he's a number two, borderline 2-3 on a championship caliber team, which, hey, you're still really good if that's who you are.
Oh, yeah.
But I also, I have my questions about him. And I liked what he did in Brooklyn this year a lot. I watched a ton of Nets games. And I watched a ton of Nets games last year, too, when they really weren't that good. And
Brooklyn had a system, though, that really emphasized that type of player. Mm-hmm. Like, evidence point one being Spencer Dinwiddie being very good in those isolation-type situations, pick-and-roll situations, and Caris LeVert. Like, those guys are all good in those situations, but their system made them even better.
Yeah.
And Minnesota's system isn't necessarily, or last year,
entirely know what, that's another question mark, is we don't know exactly what the offensive system here is going to look like now. Mm-hmm. Like, we just, that's something that we don't know yet. We won't know until training camp starts.
But it's easy to get excited about the idea of Cat going up to set, like, 12 high pick and rolls for D'Angelo Russell.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. I understand getting excited about that. And listen, if you're a Wolves fan and you see this team connected to an all-star name like that, you should get excited about it. Like,
totally.
It would be a talent upgrade without question here.
It's just what I'm afraid of happening is people are just going to think that this is a no-brainer move. You go get Cat's guy. Remember when the Wolves had D'Angelo Russell? What happened to that? He went and signed with Utah. Like, why didn't we go get D'Angelo Russell? Well, there's a lot of things that are out of your control. Mm-hmm. The perception of your roster's assets matter in that situation, and like that you're going to be trading back. And Russell has to agree to sign with you. If he wants to play in Utah over Minnesota, it's a sign and trade. You know, it's like there's a lot that would have to happen to make it work.
And I am also curious what Brooklyn would match to. Say they don't get Kyrie. Say they strike out free agency wise. What they would match on him?
Yeah, if he's going to be like they get one star, but they need another one.
Yeah, I'm curious what they go up to. I'm curious if they just give him the max. I'm very curious.
Well,
if that's the case.
Funny that the thing you can kind of parallel it to is Wiggins.
Yeah,
right. Like
although Wiggins got an extension.
No, that's what I'm talking about. Is like what I think, in retrospect, everyone agrees with, is you shouldn't have given him the extension. Mm-hmm. You should have let him hit restricted free agency and seen what his market is.
Yeah.
Like what Brooklyn did with Russell. So I think the Wolves would have, had they let Wiggins go into restricted free agency, they would have matched anything.
Yeah.
Because obviously they deemed it worth having him at a 5-year max.
Mm-hmm.
But Wiggins, you know, if he would have got that 4-year max from Charlotte, then the Wolves could have matched that. So I think it'll probably
be happier today. A little bit.
That matters. I think that matters. That is, in my mind, that is the miscue of the Andrew Wiggins situation, is not having him hit restricted free agency. Like, you probably match, if you're the Wolves, you're the number one overall pick 4 years into his career, you probably match whatever his his offer sheet is. You just do that.
Especially someone that's been healthy throughout his career, too. Yeah. It's so much different than Jabari Parker in Milwaukee, where he was the number two pick in that draft.
I don't know if Wiggins would have got it.
I don't think he would have. I don't think that he showed enough.
Even better. Yeah. And so that's my point for bringing that up is I think that's what Brooklyn's mindset's going to be, too. Yeah. Like, well, let's see what your market is. Like, show us. Mm-hmm. You know, are you this good where other people think you're worth a max? If so, we'll match that. But if not, we feel a lot more comfortable with you at $20 million a year.
Oh, yeah, you know? Absolutely. I would, too. I think that's probably a fair number for him. That's about where I would want the market to be if I were Brooklyn. Or or if I were a GM, that's where I would feel comfortable with him at.
Yeah, I think so, too.
All right, NBA Finals, 2-1 Raptors winning right now. Game 4 is set for tomorrow night. Klay Thompson's supposed to play. Kevin Durant will not be playing. Last night was really interesting in the fact that Steph Curry at 47 points was, for the most part, really good, and the Raptors were just better offensively, and Steph doesn't have a whole bunch of help. But what has your... What
he doesn't?
No. Well, I mean, he's got two All-Stars, but DeMarcus Cousins was not good last night.
I mean, there was some serious run of time where he was not playing with good players.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Siakam getting to attack Jarebko over and over and over again.
What is Jordan Bell doing? In the NBA Finals.
I don't know. Dane, I don't have an answer for you here,
I mean, people will, and it's fair to say he was playing with, you know, you want to do the Hall of Fame, like Andre Iguodala, Hall of Famer, Draymond Green, Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Like, he was playing with those guys. But he was also playing with very limited players. And Draymond and Iguodala are also Hall of Famers who are limited players.
And Iguodala's hurt right now, too.
Yeah.
This is like saying LeBron in 2015, oh, Hall of Famer Sean Marion.
Yeah.
Like, technically, right. But.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I was just really impressed with how Toronto played.
Yeah.
And to be able to match a 47-point Steph Curry barrage, you need to dominate on the other side of the ball in the offensive half court, and they absolutely did. And, I mean, you can just point to some of that being a good shot-making night,
mm-hmm.
but it was a dang good shot-making night. Like,
I mean, Danny Green had an unbelievable night, not only shooting, but defensively, I thought he did. He held his own. That the chase-down block that he had was awesome, too. Quinn Cook had a rough night attacking the basket.
No, but it was like, but Quinn Cook has also been like helpful.
Yeah. Oh, he is. I think he is one of the biggest reasons that they're not down 0-3.
He hit like three, like step back mid range jumpers on like the possessions where like Steph was like, oh, okay, I can't do it again on this possession. Like, Quinn Cook was interesting, but he's miniature.
Yeah.
And those need to be dunks. Like, for most players, both of those that he got blocked on consecutive possessions, I think, like, those have to be dunks.
At least in the span of three possessions, not consecutive. Yeah,
yeah. It was
a rough couple minutes for Quinn.
It was.
He's a good story, though. Like, I like seeing Quinn Cook in the finals, like a dude that was in the G League playing for the Canton Charge not too long ago.
It feels like everybody in these finals, I think it's 14 of these guys on the rosters have played in the G League. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
In the NBA finals.
That's wild to think about.
I mean, the Raptors had such a good G League team.
The Raptors have really had a good G League program. Like, Siakam spent some time there, I believe.
And then a lot of the Warriors players are just G League players.
Yes. That's the other thing.
No, I mean, Alphonso McKinney's been really helpful for them.
I like him as a player. Yeah. I think he could be like a legit player outside of Golden State.
Yeah, I like what I've seen. If he would have, that was like the turning point where he like got, where Draymond got that, just decided to take the ball away, mm-hmm. like right underneath the basket, and they dropped it off to McKinney, try to dunk it.
Yeah.
And like Ibaka blocked him / fouled him. If McKinney gets that big dunk at Oracle, I think that cuts it to like 6 or 8 or something like that.
And
that
instead of going to the free throw and missing both. Yeah.
That's what I was like, that might have been the momentum, as you want to call it, like turner of the game.
That's the moment where if you're the Raptors and that happens and you look back up at the scoreboard, you're like, we've played really well and this is it.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
You get a little tight.
Yes, you start to tighten up, but instead it didn't turn out that way, so they got to feel a little bit better about themselves. But and even Kawhi Leonard, watching him last night, and I know everything he does is quiet, but last night felt like a quiet 37-6 or whatever.
But it's because he's getting the free throw line.
He's getting the free throw.
It's quieter when you get... I don't know what he finished.
I think he was 10 of 11 from the line. I'm not positive, but
he was 10 of 11 at the end of the third, because that meant... because he was 16 of 16 in game two.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're getting that many points at the line, obviously those are your highest percentage shots. And doing it with such volume is what makes it give you that sneaky huge game.
So he finished 10 of 11 from the free throw line, so he must not have gone to the line at all in the fourth quarter. But one of my favorite things to watch about him is just the rotation of the ball coming out of his hands when he shoots.
Yeah.
Some of those three-pointers that he hits, it is so pretty when the ball leaves his hands. It's really unbelievable. And I don't think I've ever seen someone just in life waste less motion than he does. Everything he does is so efficient the way he moves. It's really unbelievable to watch.
And it's harder to shoot a basketball when your hands are huge.
Yeah, that's like
his hands are
legitimately the size of Shaq's hands.
Yeah, totally.
And Shaq is the largest human being that I've ever met.
I would agree with that.
It's freakishly.
No, I think the story for Toronto, though, was Lowry and Van Vliet and Green being able to hit those shots.
Yeah.
That is just huge for them,
mm-hmm.
because you're going to get that 30 from Kawhi and you're going to get those 10 free throws or close to. But for them to beat Golden State, even if Golden State's at full charge, you'd need to have those type of shooting nights.
Well, and I'm curious, if Golden State was at full full strength last night. The way the Raptors shot the ball, they probably win that game anyways.
Well, you stay in it for sure.
Because, I mean, you make 17 threes against Golden State, and if the Warriors were at full strength, Steph probably doesn't go for 47 because he's not going to get 31 shots up when Klay and Kevin Durant are both out there, too. Like, there are just not enough possessions typically for him to get that many shots up in a game. So he probably doesn't have 47. But if you're 17 of 38 from three, knock down 20 of 21 free throws, that's a game you're going to be in, if not win by close to double figures, if you're the Raptors, even if the Warriors are healthy.
So I thought this stat was kind of floored me. This is from Blake Murphy of The Athletic, who covers the Raptors, was that in the half court, which obviously after a Warriors make, you're just like walking the ball down the floor, they scored 1.44 points per possession.
That's really good.
It's like a dunks too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that is just over the course of the entire game. And also, then on the other side of the ball, when they have such a good half-court defense, that's how Toronto wins a series, is by winning the half-court elements of the game. They can't compete with the Warriors in the transition game.
You have to pick your spots really well, and I do think Toronto's done that. And partly, Golden State's transition defense has not been good. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I don't know if this actually happens this way, but the one thing that might lead to some success for Toronto in the half court is the speed at which they bring the ball up. And that's something that here a lot. I know Ryan has talked about getting into pace. I think it's something that you've asked him during this past season, like how you judge pace. And part of it is getting the ball into the front court with 22 seconds or more on the shot clock. And Kyle Lowry does a great job of that. Yeah. Like, that is one of the things. Even if the Warriors score or if it's a dead ball on the baseline, Kyle Lowry wants to get it and go and get into the offense. And part of that is the Warriors don't have the ability to get comfortable in their half-court defensive set.
Yeah, it's a really interesting, like, philosophical question in my mind of, like, how as a coach do you decide that your team's playing with enough pace?
Yeah.
Because it's not bad to take late shot clock shots if they're coming in the flow of the offense. I know before the series, I don't know what it's at right now, but a quarter of the Raptors' shots were coming in the last 6 seconds of the shot clock in the Milwaukee series, which is a lot, and that's late. That's normally when you start. I mean, we watch the Wolves. It's like, oh, Jeff Teague still has the ball. Like, time to shoot.
No,
like,
one else has touched it. Who's going to get the grenade?
But there's different types of grenades, you know? And I think, and that's the idea that Ryan's talked about, is being like, if we can get it up and be in the half court with 21, 22 seconds left on the shot clock, then we can use that time, to flow. And you think about some of the best individual players in the league. They take a lot of time.
Yeah.
I mean, James Harden in isolation, Kawhi in isolation, Kat in the post. That takes a long time for that guy to get to their shot. They're very good at that shot. But if you dilly-dally, that shot becomes more rushed.
Mm-hmm.
And James Harden can only take the step back three.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the option to rip through and get to the rim.
And it becomes easier to defend.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I don't think we have... That's why I don't really like how we have, like, general pace metrics, because I don't... It's about how you're running your offense that determines how effectively you have your pace. It's kind of just a subjective thing of the coach to be like, I feel like we're playing with the right pace.
Yeah.
Or not. Because it depends on what his vision is for that pace to be. I don't know. And Toronto seems to have a really comfortable relationship with that.
I think Nick Nurse has done a great job throughout this entire playoff run for the most part. Yep. I think that he's been – it has made the decision for Toronto and Masai Ujiri last offseason to part ways with Coach of the Year Dwayne Casey and give Nick Nurse the keys. It's made that look like a really smart choice.
And that's – I mean, you've seen even some of the players say is like – Dwayne Casey was a good coach, but it was a lot of the same over and over.
It was too by the book, I think, is something that it was.
Yeah, and the by the book stuff is probably like the over 50% move. Like, so it's the quote unquote smart move, and you're like, well, if we hit 52% every single time, that's better. You know,
that's how you win. That's how you win 59 games in the regular season, like they did. That's a lot of what I thought about Milwaukee this past season too.
Yeah.
I think that Bud is kind of cut from that cloth where they're going to do things that are going to be really successful in the regular season, but I think Dwayne Casey really had a lot of struggles in trying to adjust.
And right.
in his defense, a lot of coaches have had a lot of struggles trying to adjust to LeBron James.
Yeah.
Like, I get it.
Right.
But also, you have to try and find a way. And Casey seemed a little stubborn in that sense, and mm-hmm. Nick Nurse hasn't been.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of more the old school mentality of, like, pound the rock.
Yeah.
Versus, I think, what you'd see if you want to, you know, call Golden State or some of the more modern teams, they're willing to try different things. Mm-hmm. And, like, sometimes that gets it so their effectiveness is way beyond that 52,
yeah.
right? And then sometimes it doesn't work,
yeah.
and you're hitting sequences of possessions at 40, but in the aggregate, it ends up being more than the conservative option.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's, I think, as a...
It lowers their floor, but it raises their ceiling.
And I'm sure, as a coach who's, you know, been in the league for 20, 30 years, it's hard to deviate from mm-hmm. those things where you're like, well, this is successful.
Yeah.
Objectively successful. Like yeah. it has been. Look at my track record. But in 2019, it's different. It is different, particularly to do so at the highest levels.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's certainly an interesting thing. But I do really like what I've seen from Toronto. I like what I've seen from Nick Nurse. I like that Masai. I struggle with what to call their last offseason because trading for Kawhi Leonard is not a gamble.
Yeah.
Like, you traded DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard. You make that 10 out of 10 times. And you also got that Danny Green guy in the trade, too, which makes it an absolute steal. But
story of that, man.
I like that it did take guts to do. And yeah. I'm glad to see that pay off. Even if they don't win another game and they lose a series in six, I'm glad that they did that. And I like to see something like that pay off because partly it gives me hope that more franchises will be open to trying something like that when it is time to push all the chips into the middle of the table.
But it just wasn't that many chips. It wasn't that many chips.
Yeah.
DeMar DeRozan on making 27
but
a year.
Like even if they would have stuck with DeMar, they wouldn't be in the finals now. They would have been another 50-win team, and they would have just tried to run it back again next year, whereas they traded for someone that could be gone less than a month from now. He could be a member of another team.
I hear what you're saying, and it was a risk. Of course it was a risk.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't like the idea that everybody talks about that he took this massive risk Kawhi.
I like that he said, okay, it's now or never.
Yeah.
Not like some massive risk. Because, no, trading right. for Kawhi Leonard, the basketball player, is not a massive risk. But I like it's now or never. It's our time or it's time to blow it up. I like that he did that and it's been successful. I'm not trying to say,
No.
It was a risk getting rid of DeMar for Kawhi. You don't know how. No, you knew that you were going to be better.
And it wasn't just DeMar. It wasn't that much more. Jakob Poeltl.
And a one.
And the 29th pick in this, in this year's draft. I just don't. If you're the other 28 teams in the league, you're like, why the heck do we not, like,
how do you feel if you're the Lakers and you were, I mean, maybe the Spurs didn't want to negotiate with the Lakers, but if you were too scared to give up a couple guys of your quote-unquote young core that really I don't think is very good anyways, and they got Kawhi Leonard and maybe a title for what they sent, like, you can't feel very good about yourself.
No. They didn't have to give up that much. And I'm wondering what the other, you know, I wonder what the other offers were. And yes, we should acknowledge Kawhi comes in as a huge question mark. Like, is he hurt? Yeah. Is he really mad?
Like, does he want to be here? Is he going to show up?
Right. Well, it turns out Boardman gets paid.
Boardman's going to get paid this summer. That's for sure. I love that article so much. I cannot talk about
that. You saw he talked about it in the postgame presser.
No, I didn't. I did not watch last night's postgame availability.
It was,
what'd he say?
He was like, yeah, that was something that when I was in college is what I would talk about when I was on the floor with my teammates was one of the things I said. It's just like,
Nope.
Okay.
If you are playing against him, say you're playing for some other team in the West Coast Conference. I couldn't tell you who's in the West Coast Conference with San Diego State. I don't know. If he's guarding you, and that's all he's saying, you have to go back to your huddle or go back to the locker room at halftime. You're like, I'm playing a psychopath.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you have to be telling your teammates.
I can't think in any sport, has there been a superstar like him?
I don't think so. Not that I can think of.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's been one in football. Maybe Mike Trout in baseball because he's quiet, but I think there's a difference between being quiet and walking around the basketball floor muttering, Boardman gets paid.
And being sponsored by New Balance.
Yeah. I mean, and those shoes aren't terrible. Like, I wouldn't buy them, but they're not, like, New Balance has made worse. he's helped New Balance.
Matt Bonner
reputation.
Used to rock New Balance.
Matt Bonner was the last one prior to Kawhi Leonard to wear New Balance on the floor, which is a very
they can both shoot.
Thing.
Yeah. They can both shoot.
Kawhi's a little bit better, but hey, former Spurs man.
Bonner could Red Rocket.
Yeah. I think that's all for us today. So thank you for listening to Raised by Wolves. Danny Cunningham, Dane Moore with you this week. We'll be back again next week, maybe talking about the end of the NBA Finals. Who knows? But the offseason will be coming, and we'll be talking about plenty of interesting things. I'm sure there will be more Wolves news, because there always is. Be sure to subscribe, rate, review, give us 5 stars, all that stuff. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Score North app. We'll talk to you next time on Raised by Wolves.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.